Fall sports are a lot of fun, but like everything, you need to be careful how you use your body out there to avoid injuring yourself. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. It's great to exercise and be active, but no matter what your age, there are some precautions you need to take without attention, a little of attention anyway, to safety. A wrong turn or maybe an overuse of your joints or your muscles results in some pains and aches and strains and a whole lot worse sometimes. Larry Time Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine, the Spine Center, or the I should say UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Is that right, Larry?
That's close enough.
Thanks for coming by again, Bill Boisenault, who is an associate, or no, full professor. Full professor.
Full. I'm full of it.
Yes,
right now,
he is very full of it. Yes.
Well, he's at UW School of Medicine, Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals. And great to see you again, Bill.
Very glad to be back.
Wonderful to have you guys with us. Well, many of us take part in different activities and play different sports depending on season. What are some of the kind of fall sports and injuries that you tend to see?
Ankle sprains, a lot of ankle sprains. Volleyball, soccer, football. I mean, even some in cross country, you're going to get more overuse injuries, tendonitises, and patellofemoral pain at the knee, and maybe some foot pain, things like that. But in your contact sports, like football and soccer, which really should be considered a contact sport, I've seen, and they do use the term tackle, which I learned as the soccer parent. And, you know, with volleyball, with the jumping activities, you see a lot of ankle sprains. And you know, there are very good preventive programs out there. In fact, there is research done at our Sports Medicine Center on the importance of a balance program and how that can prevent injuries. You know, that being said, we're knee-deep into the season now. So, you know, certainly instituting a balance program would be useful, but it really should be started well before the start of the season. The other important thing, particularly when you're playing on a field like soccer or football, I'm also an athletic trainer. One of the things that I would do as a trainer is I would go out and I would walk the field and look for divots or anything that you could step in to cause an injury. And you would think that they're well-groomed fields. But, you know, when you've got a soccer facility where you've got, you know, a dozen, 15 fields, they're not always well-maintained, especially when there's not a lot of rain. They tend to get hard and bumpy. So those kinds of things can trip people up. So just taking a walk around the field and surveying and looking for areas that can get you in trouble is useful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In the spine clinic, it's traumatic and then repetitive overuse. And at this stage in the fall, people are already involved in the activity. So part of it is identifying when should you worry about aches and pains and when not to, because a lot of people hurt at this stage in the season already. And, you know, generally our principle has been all along that if somebody's experiencing sharp pain, shooting pain, pinching pain, that is happening more than just once or twice, that's not a pain you want to work through. Pain that is increasing and interfering with function, how much they can run, how much they can jump, they're not getting better with ice, and if they're taking anti-inflammatories, that's also a time when they should be seen. And there are some conditions, whether it's related to trauma or repetitive overuse, that can impact the nervous system, nerves. And so if people are having pins and needles and numbness along with whatever other symptoms that, again, seems to be getting worse, not better, that's a good time to be seen.
There are injuries, obviously, that need time to heal. But what about those that probably going to take some time to heal but may not necessarily sideline the person?
You know, your garden variety bumps and bruises. You know, we've seen kids who have contusions, who get, you know, hit in the shin or bumped or hit in the shoulder, particularly if they're in a predominantly lower extremity sport, they can continue to play, again, as long as it's not interfering with their play, it's not putting them at risk of another injury. So, you know, when we look at that, where they're not necessarily sidelined, but we look at their performance and see if that injury has affected how they run, how they move, how they start and stop, even if it's not a lower extremity injury, that does put them at risk for an additional injury. So, you know, we may back down their practice a little bit so that they don't get re-injured and really focus on rehabilitating that part, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Thinking about it, you know, most people I know are not professionals, but they're out there working with a pretty active bunch of friends and so forth. And the injuries I've noted don't necessarily just happen to the serious athletes. Frankly, it might even be the opposite.
Yeah. And the athletes typically are going to have some medical personnel close by, whether it's an athletic trainer, a PT, or a physician. It doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get the care. They may not be volunteering symptoms that they're having because they don't want to lose practice time. They don't want to lose their position on the team. I mean, there's all kinds of pressures to continue to participate. And I think like the things you already mentioned, if there's swelling in an area and the swelling is worse after activity, you need to be more cautious. That impacts how muscles function, how the joint functions. So there are some basic warning signs that tell you you shouldn't be working through this necessarily, and you need some rest.
And I expect there are some injuries that you say, hey, you're done for the season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, an ACL tear is, you know, sort of the classic where you're done for the season. And in many cases, a concussion, depending upon the severity of the concussion.
Yeah. And the other thing with the fall, not so much team sports that are indoors or outdoors, but people who run and bike, as we lose daylight, we need more careful about wearing the appropriate clothing and having lights. And also, as leaves start falling and, you know, bike riders, it gets pretty slick on the paths because of the leaves. And so that kind of goes with the season that we're heading into here. Mm-hmm.
So lots of good things to think about to prevent bad things from happening.
That's right.
That's the goal.
Right.
Lori Dine Brody and Bill Boisenald, our guests today, as we talk about avoiding injury with fall sports and other fall activities. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment, or even photo there. Steve in South Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for the program. Folks, it's new to me, but plenty of people have gone through it, but I've entered my 60s.
Yeah, welcome to the club.
Well, I don't know if it's the same club. I've developed some muscle rigidity. In fact, it used to be every once in a while I get cramps and all, but now I have rigidity throughout the day, and I'm just wondering if that's a natural progression of age and maybe how to counter it. And also, I'm getting more of the cramping. My muscles seem to cramp easily.
Steve, when you say rigidity, what do you mean by that? You can't move?
It means like they're very stiff and they don't move right as smoothly as they used to.
And is it in a certain body part, your legs versus arms or trunk, or is it all over?
Both. In fact, I seem to have to, whenever I have to stretch my arms a little bit, the biceps seem to, both on both sides, seem to be kind of sore. Just all over the body for some reason.
Okay. And how long has this been going on?
Actually, it's developed over the last few months, and I'm towards 61 now at this point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's getting a little worse, correct, from what you described?
Yes, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Steve, have you seen anybody for this? Have you seen your physician for this condition?
Well, yeah, they've looked at my labs and things and can't see anything wrong with them. The labs seem normal.
Yeah. Okay. So good. So they ran tests. Has it gotten worse since the last time they ran the tests, or significantly worse since they ran the tests?
Yes, I would say moderately worse since they last ran the test.
Okay. All right. Because what you're describing, it's unusual for, you know, some of the things that we typically talk about, you know, a tendonitis or bursitis or a muscle pull. And the fact that it's multiple regions, I mean, lab tests sounds like they were the right thing to do. I guess I would contact your physician again, and even though they don't know what it is, you just need to tell them it's worse and describe in some detail how it's gotten worse since they ran those tests. It may be that there's additional tests they would run or rerun the tests again, just to make sure that nothing shows up that would help sort out why this is happening. If they run all those tests and they're negative, then seeing a physical therapist might be worthwhile and help you with stretches or sleeping positions. But I would start with your physician first and just let them know what has changed since the last time you were in with those tests.
Yep, definitely worth it. Because, you know, just because you're 60, you really...
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. It doesn't mean it's part of the normal aging process.
Well, yeah. I was recalling Michael Perry's article, column yesterday, where he was talking about a couple...
Yeah, the dancers.
Dancers, like in their 90s.
Yeah. Yes.
And the guy can do kicks and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When I go to see the doctor brings in people to see what I have him demonstrate.
Right. As
what
witnesses.
He can
do. Yes.
So, Steve, good luck. Thank you for calling. Carol in West Salem, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Yes, hello. I have what's called a baseball finger. It's on my right index finger, and I've had it since June. And my question is, how long will it take to heal? I'm splinting it. I did not get surgery. And what will be the function after it's totally healed?
Well, can you tell me exactly what baseball finger is?
It's also called mallet finger.
Okay.
M-A-L-L-E-T.
Yep. Okay.
What is it, by the way, Lori?
it's they probably call it baseball finger because it happens often when you get hit in the tip of your finger with a ball. And what happens is you get a little fracture at the very end of your finger where your extensor tendon attaches. And so when you try to fully straighten your finger, you can't extend the tip of your finger.
Okay.
It's a non-surgical kind of intervention for this. They rarely do surgery on it. When they do is they put a splint on it. The prognosis is good if you leave the splint on, but you've got to keep the splint on so that fracture can heal. So if you take it off every day and try it and, you know, road test and say, oh, does it work yet? Okay, then your 6 weeks starts over. So you really need to keep the splint on, and if you do, it has a good prognosis.
Okay. And then there is a bump on the top.
Yep.
What is the bump exactly?
That's probably where the fracture was. You pulled off a little piece of bone. Typically, you pull off a little piece of bone at the end of that tendon. So instead of tearing the tendon, you pull off a piece of bone where that tendon attaches to the bone. So you want to keep it in that splint so that bone can heal back down to the underlying bone. But you will probably always have a bump there because it's going to heal imperfectly. But hopefully it will heal well enough to be functional again where you can fully extend your finger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Carol. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our UW physical therapist. Our guests, I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in as we talk about avoiding injuries and if you can't avoid them, dealing with them with our two guests, UW physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Questions, call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Speaking of Facebook page, we had a post from Gigi, who at 51 years old, ex-runner, active in P90X and kickboxing type classes. When I get out of bed in the morning, my heels kill me. Thinking it might be plantar fasciitis, I purchased cheap orthotics. Now my inner ankle area on one foot is sometimes a regular shooting pain, and often if I accidentally hit the ankle, the pain is quick and unbearable. What should I do?
Oh, she should see somebody.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be plantar fasciitis. You know, the classic symptom is having bad heel pain first thing in the morning. And we don't have any information from her about the pattern of pain over the course of the day, if it gets better as she moves on it, then gets stiff again. When she, after she sits for a while, and you know, an inexpensive orthotic is a good trial to see if that's the cause, but she may have some other underlying issues, where the orthotic may not be the right, intervention for her. or perhaps the orthotic that she chose. So, you know, if she gets this horrible pain, the quick and unbearable with bumping the ankle, then I start thinking of things like stress fracture, which would fit with her age group. In the kickboxing category, you know, the amount of time spent on a single leg and that weight bearing on a single leg puts tremendous forces through your foot and ankle. So, you know, given the information that Gigi has provided for us, I think she needs to go in and be seen and rule out something like a stress fracture first and then get on track for the right intervention for whether it's plantar fasciitis or what the overuse problem is.
Okay. And seen soon, right? Before mm-hmm. she can, yes. She should stop activity until she goes in to be mm-hmm. seen.
Yeah. Makes good sense to me. Fred in Menominee, it is your turn. Hi, Fred.
Well, hi. It's good to talk to you. My wife and I are 70 years old,
mm-hmm.
so we beat that poor fellow who's
60-year-old.
Because you're 60 doesn't mean you hurt. You don't hurt much worse. At least I don't hurt much worse when I'm now that I'm 70.
Go ahead.
Having said that, we are fairly active. We want to keep up our activity level, keep what we got, and not lose it. I do push-ups and planks and stuff like that in the morning as soon as I get up. My wife does them at night, and I was talking to a physical therapist about, you know, doing some rotational and stretching exercises like that, and that person said, don't do them in the morning. So is there a better time in the day to do your exercise, resistance training and all that sort of stuff?
What was the physical therapist's rationale for not doing them in the morning?
Well, he was seeing me for something else. I had a hematoma in my calf, and that's another long story. We won't go there.
Okay.
And it was just a side conversation. I mentioned this. And I said, you know, do this in the morning. He said, no, because when you wake up from sleeping, yeah, I guess he did give me rationale. When you wake up from sleeping, your back has lengthened. It's relaxed, and the discs have expanded a little bit, and your back is not as compressed. So if you do bendy, stretchy stuff, you have a greater chance of popping a disc out. Whereas if you wait until later in the day, the back is compressed again because you've been standing up, etc., and it's more stable.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, we are a little taller in the morning than we are at the end of the day. The discs, the inner part of the disc kind of soaks in fluid, as much, you know, fluid as it can, and so the discs are a little taller, a little thicker first thing in the morning. Once we start sitting, standing, walking around, you're right, the fact that gravity and weight pushes a little bit of that fluid out.
you could feel that however coming.
So if you spring a leak, you know what happened. But in terms of, you know, I have people that I have given this advice, but they have a history of disc problems. If you have a history of a herniated disc or the outer part of the disc is weakened, then first thing in the morning may not be the best time to do strengthening exercises. There's other exercises that may be more beneficial, but not necessarily the strengthening exercise, or be careful with stretching. But, you know, in lieu of a history of a disc herniation, you know, a major back issue like that, as long as you wake up and you're feeling pretty good, maybe a little stiff early morning stiffness, but not more than that, I would just start out gentle, start out slow. But AM is okay for most people.
It really is. And, you know, I mean, if you roll out of bed onto the floor and do your push-ups, that's one thing. But if you get up and you walk around and you, you know, brush your teeth or take off your pajamas or whatever, then, you know, you've kind of worked out some of that morning stiffness.
Right.
And research shows that morning exercisers are the most consistent exercisers.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to – if you're doing exercises appropriately and you're listening to your body, you're not at any more risk in the morning at the end of the day unless you have that history of disc problems in the past.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. We had – and here's an email from Joseph I think is really worth mentioning, who says, I'm in my 60s and had similar joint pain as our first caller today, who's in his 60s. One doctor suggested a dose of antibiotics in case it was Lyme disease, which he had, and he said all my problems cleared up in about a week.
Yeah, well, that's the issue is, you know, what Steve described is not the usual muscle pull that we talk about or the type of injury or overuse thing. And when it's body-wide, it's, you know, if it's both left and right side and it includes your trunk, you have to worry about something systemic going on. And Lyme's disease would be an example. But that's why the physician did the lab tests. I'm assuming that's what they were looking for. And so again, for Steve, the fact that his symptoms have gotten moderately worse since the lab tests were done, you know, it's time to go back again and maybe a different test we run. But Lyme disease is one example that can cause symptoms like this.
Nick in Green Bay. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I just got a quick question. I'm a 41-year-old male. I'm pleasantly plump. And so the doctor doesn't really think I'm pleasantly plump, so I started going to the gym.
Okay.
And I've been getting on the bike, like an exercise bike, and they've got the program where you can go up and down hills and stuff, and I've been doing that, but the only problem is then at night my sciatic nerve is just killing. Is there anything I can do about that? Or, I mean, it hurts so bad.
Well, in terms of the bicycle piece, you know, I would try a different bicycle. And I don't know if they have other styles there. But, for example, in our fitness center, we have three or four different kinds of bikes. And you may need to find a bike that's a better fit for you, that has a better seat. And just overall distributes your weight a little better. So you have some weight on your bottom, some weight on your feet, and some on your hands. In addition to that,
I'm doing like 30, 35 minutes at a time. Is that a little too much for someone that's just beginning? Or?
Not necessarily, but we have to figure out what's causing your sciatic at night, whether it's the bike and the position you're on, whether it's the duration of your exercise, or whether it is the exercise itself. So then the next issue to deal with is the hill program. So on the hill program, when you're going uphill, do you get a lot of resistance on the pedals?
It's crazy. It'll go from like 0 up to 18.
Okay.
I'm going to the YMCA, so they got a lot of bikes, but
okay.
I really like this bike.
Okay. I would try doing a manual program and finding a cadence and amount of resistance that works for you. So you can deal with the question of, is it the duration or is it the hills? And, you know, for those that are genuine bikers, you know, when you go uphill, you don't stay in the same gear and push hard, push hard, push hard. You change gear so that you can keep your cadence up. So when you're riding an exercise bike, keeping your cadence up is really the way to go. So I would start with changing the program and keeping the duration the same and seeing if that changes your symptoms. And then if you're still having sciatic at night, then you need to look at the duration and see if you need to shorten up that 30 to 35 minutes and fill in the remainder of time with a different activity.
Yeah, Nick, I would agree. I would modify your current program, and it's a good program to start with. And, you know, it's friendly to the joints. There's no pounding on the joints. If you try the things that Lori recommended, you're still having the bad sciatica pain, then it may be the sitting position itself while you're biking. And I can't tell you what you have, but there are certain types of disc problems that can cause sciatica, and sitting, you know, bending forward and sitting makes it worse. So if you try the modifications, you're still having the bad sciatica, then it's probably the seated position. And
I sit all day for work, so I mean, like, I sit 10 hours a day for work.
Yeah.
And then I go home and play PlayStation for 3 hours. So it's just sitting all the time.
Well, as much as you can, like lots of people is what you described. As much as you can, you know, get up, walk, make any excuse to walk a little bit, stand up, just stretch backward a little bit. And when you come off the bike, I would stand up, put your hands on your hips, and just gently bend backward a few times, just to move your back in a different direction than we're in when we're sitting for that length of time. So, you know, again, if you try the modifications in your training program, you're still having the bad sciatica, then I would try to do some exercise where you're not sitting but standing, an elliptical or, you know, some other piece of equipment where you're not sitting.
But that's a lot of sitting in your day. And again, research shows that even if you go exercise for up to an hour at the gym, if the rest of your day is sedentary, you're not going to get the health benefits that you would need. So at the end of that 10-hour day, you need to find an alternative activity to PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Wii, you know, if you love, you know, doing some kind of computer or electronic game, think about Wii, where you're at least standing and playing tennis or swinging a golf club or something like that.
Yeah, worth it. Okay, good luck. Thanks, Nick, for calling. Susan in Black River Falls, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. I've had two spinal surgeries and a hip surgery in 2010, and the hip surgery seems to be getting worse. And I went to physical therapy, and it continued to get worse. I finally went back to see the doctor. Was hoping to see the doctor that that did the surgery on my hip, because the labra had torn and they had to unfold it. They lasered it off and unfolded it. And he did the x-ray with the dye in there and said that he thought the labra had folded again and that this time he would have to do surgery. Only I wasn't ready for that surgery, and he could see that. So we postponed it. In the meantime, he moved away. And I went to see another doctor, and he told me I was nuts, and basically all I wanted was drugs, and all I want to do is get back to work, and I want to get back to going dancing again. I mean, the OPM, first comment out of his mouth was that, "You're a dancer." I go, "Yeah." But I haven't been able to do any of that.
No.
The pain is in the hip itself when I move, when I walk. And then it also sends muscle spasms down the back of my leg and up into my back, the middle of my back, all the way to the shoulder blade, where I have to lay down. I can't and concentrate on my breathing because the spasms are so bad.
Okay.
So, Bill? Susan, how can we help you? What question do you have?
A chiropractor, and he said there was an excessive amount of scar tissue on that labra.
Okay.
And he thinks that the sciatica is involved.
Okay.
So, is there anything I can do to break that up so it will go away without having to have a hip replacement?
Well, if it's truly a scar tissue, then there are some stretches, some joint mobilization. It's not muscle stretching, but joint stretching that can be done. And in terms of the hip, it usually requires a second person, a second pair of hands. It's really difficult to self-mobilize. So I'm assuming that's what the chiropractor is doing with you. Is that correct?
No, he won't touch me. He said that if he did what he should do, that I would hate him because it's going to cost. That caused an extreme amount of pain. When he got done testing me, he didn't even do the full testing of the range and stuff, and I already had lost feeling in that leg. And when he lowered the table, I fell off.
Okay. Okay, and you tried physical therapy. You know, I guess, Susan, what I'd recommend is if you have a primary care physician or family practice physician, maybe go in and see them and explain the story and your symptoms and see if they can give you some guidance or find another opinion possibly. But it sounds like you've gone to people who are skilled in the area in terms of people with hip problems and spine problems. So maybe I would step back and go and see your primary care physician and see what kind of plan can be developed.
Need to start, kind of go back to stage one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go. Good luck, Susan. Thank you for calling. We have Don in Soldier's Grove up next. Hi, Don.
Yeah. Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Lori and Bill. I'm a dairy farmer out here. And I went through two surgeries here in the last. Well, last winter I had a diverticulitis and had to have surgery then, and then they put me back together here this summer. Well, I got the okay to start working again, like after about 4 weeks, and I started milking cows, and I've had this problem before. All of a sudden, like my top of my arms around my shoulders, it just really get sore, and like, you know, one night here, like probably a week after I started doing it, like, I couldn't hardly lift that arm up. You know, it was that stiff. And about all I did was, you know, take some ibuprofen, and eventually it kind of went away, you know. But they still always kind of bother a little bit, and I can kind of feel it in the back of my, you know, each side of my neck, too. It's like in both shoulders off and on, so it's not like it's one side. And I just wondered if you had any pointers, because I do a lot of lifting with my arms. You know, when you
I milk cows the old-fashioned way, like with a tie stall barn where it's you're always plugging hoses and stuff in, you know. And you're,
right.
Mm-hmm.
You're raising your arms, you know, probably a couple hundred times a day. And
yikes. Yep. Okay. So, but you can move your arms through a full range of motion now?
Yeah, I mean, although I can almost feel it like, you know, in the other, you know, upper arm or shoulder this morning some. I
okay.
mean, nothing like the other one. But I've had both sides where I've had, you know, of course I thought maybe it could be some bursitis or something
yep.
that sets in when you can't hardly move it at all. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering if you had any pointers for me to...
yeah. You're correct about the bursitis. That's probably what it is, and particularly when you're having to lift overhead. So I guess the first thing is looking at what you're doing and seeing if there's any way you can modify your position so that you don't have to raise your arms overhead. So if there's a way you can lift only to shoulder height, that's going to be easier on your shoulders. So that's the first thing. And then in terms of keeping your shoulders strong, you know, you get into this question where you say, well, geez, I'm raising my arms up a couple hundred times a day. Why would I want to do strengthening? Well, it's because you're using a few muscle groups to make the same movement over and over again. But some of the other muscle groups aren't getting worked at all. So you get this imbalance. So then you say, well, I know I want to do some strengthening exercises, but when you do, again, repetitive exercises through a range of motion, sometimes that can be irritating to your joint. So in this kind of situation, I kind of default to what are called isometrics, and that's where you push against an immobile object. So, for example, if you picture yourself kind of sitting in your recliner or in a chair with your elbows bent around 90 degrees and your forearm against the side of the couch or the armrest, and then you try to push your arm out, that would be an isometric of your rotator cuff. So just doing that where you're pushing against an immobile object with your elbow bent at 90 degrees, pushing away and holding that for 3 or 4 seconds, and doing that, you know, several times throughout the day can help maintain the strength of your rotator cuff, which is the muscle group that tends to cause you the most trouble in overhead movement. So that's kind of where I would go. And if this is an ongoing problem, you could certainly consider one visit or even two to a physical therapist who can give you some other strategies for strengthening that won't annoy your shoulders and might also help with your neck that you can do at home. Because this is your vocation. It's not like, you know, something you're doing just for fun or recreation. It's going to be really important that you maintain the health of your shoulders and neck. So it'd be worthwhile to see somebody for a couple visits and just get something you can do at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got kind of a job that you stay in shape, but it kind of takes its toll on your body.
It does. Yes, it does. Because you're doing the same things over and over. Yep.
Yeah,
we see the same thing in factory workers, you know, who are very busy and active, but they're doing repetitive activities.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Good luck, Don.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha.
Thanks a lot for calling. We have Vicky in Denmark, Wisconsin, who emailed us and said, I had my right knee replaced in March. At the checkup, I asked, this is March of 2012. At the checkup, I asked the doc about the slightly painful cracking, crunching sound every time I get up from a chair. People can hear it across the room. The doctor said the x-rays are perfect, must be scar tissue.
Anytime you have arthritis that's bad enough to require a knee replacement, you're going to have some scar tissue, some thickening of the normal tissues, the joint capsule, the ligaments, and so on. So you're going to get some snap, crackle, pop. Can you fix this? It's a little hard to say without an exam. If you can feel, a snap or crackle pop in a certain spot and you can kind of put your finger on it, sometimes some massage in that area where you take your thumb and you kind of massage deep over that area can soften that and help with that. If it's a deep kind of cracking and you can't really put your finger on any place that feels like it's snapping, cracking, popping, then there's probably not a lot you can do for that short of just some traditional stretching exercises. And I'm not sure how much motion she has in her knee. But if she has sufficient motion, then I'm not sure how much additional benefit she'll get from more stretching.
I'm sure it's disconcerting if they can hear it across the room. It's embarrassing and worrisome. And those kinds of noises, they're not unusual, like Lori mentioned. And I think more common with degenerative or osteoarthritis, where you get some rough surfaces gliding over rough surfaces. But you know, I get more concerned if that noise is associated with a sharp catch or a pinch or the knee locks up, then you get more concerned, more worried.
John in Sun Prairie, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. 3 weeks ago, I was diagnosed with bicep tendonitis, and I was told to ice it for 10 days, ibuprofen, and I was given some moderate exercises. And at this point, I still have pain, especially on the top of my shoulder, but I've quit icing and stuff. And so my questions are with bicep tendonitis, about how long should I have to expect to wait for the pain to actually go away? Should I go back to icing? Should I be some kind of heat treatment? Should I do absolutely nothing? So that's sort of okay. Where I'm at.
Do you know what caused the tendonitis?
No, I don't. And there was never one moment, and I've been pretty good about I had it for about 2 months before I finally went to the doctor. I could tell there was something wrong with my arm, but it wasn't continual. And I lift weights once a week, or I did. And I'm thinking it might have been like on a curl exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was never, ever one moment.
Yeah. And are you doing the exercises that you were given, and how do they feel?
A couple of the exercises seem to feel fine. One sort of mimics a curl.
Yep.
Well, actually, two of them do. And those, even though it doesn't hurt right when I'm using an exercise band, one of those plastic bands, when I do it, it doesn't actually hurt at the time, but it seems like there's a delayed reaction.
Right.
And so, if I ever have to just load up my arm, like getting out of bed or something, then it really gets me.
Yeah. But
a lot of times I feel nothing, and then all of a sudden I'll be walking, doing absolutely zero, and I get this pain again in my shoulder. And so.
Yep. Did you see a physical therapist for this, or were...
No,
you just got the band. Okay, because it sounds like your exercises are not dosed properly for you. So there are some exercises you should be doing at this point in time. But the delayed reaction and sort of the sharp pains you get every now and then suggest that they're not being dosed properly. So what I would do is get in to see a physical therapist and have someone give you a little more structure to your exercise program so that you can make some forward progress. A biceps tendonitis can go on to a biceps rupture. And so you want to make sure that it's being treated correctly. And it's been going on for a while now, since it's a couple months since you went in. And honestly, ice and ibuprofen aren't going to fix it. As soon as you go back to activity, you will find that the tendonitis rears its ugly head again, because the tendon has to be rehabilitated. So the exercises are a big piece of the rehabilitation, but it sounds like they're not dosed right for where your tendon is at in the healing stage right now.
When you say dosed right, you mean what?
Either the amount of resistance, the number of repetitions, or the type of muscle contraction. So if you're curling up and lowering down, so that would be the place I would start. I probably wouldn't have you doing both of those. I would watch you do those. I would feel your tendon as you do those, and I'd make a decision whether you should only be curling up or whether you should only be lowering down. And I'd also look at the resistance from your band. I myself am not a huge lover of resistive bands, because they don't apply the resistance in a way that matches the force curve of your muscle. So they're okay in many situations for general training, but for rehab, they're a little bit dicey. So, you know, I might want to change the way you're getting resistance in your exercise program as well.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our UW physical therapist, with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with physical therapist Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault about avoiding injuries while enjoying those fall sports. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. And also go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to post a question or comment there. Love to hear from you. Michelle in Hubertus has been waiting a bit. Michelle, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Okay, so yesterday I had injured my hamstring while working out, and I believe I had torn it. I don't believe it's a severe tear or anything. But while I was working out, I definitely heard or felt, I should say, felt a pop. And then throughout the day, I've increased in pain. It's radiated up through the back, all the way up through my hip. And I've been wanting to just self-treat it without going to see a doctor, just by using the Rice method with rest, ice, compression, and elevation, and then also using ibuprofen. So basically, I want to know if you think that I'm okay self-treating by using that method, and also I'm unsure about what to do after that with regaining strength, and also what to do for stretches.
So is there any bruising or discoloration in the back of your thigh that you can
see? I actually hadn't even looked yet.
Oh, okay.
And I'm driving right now.
Okay. Are you able to walk normally?
No.
All right. I'd be seen for this. Because if you felt a pop, you could have avulsed something from, especially if you're feeling pain up into your hip, you could have pulled off a piece of bone where your hamstring attaches to your ischial tuberosity. In your buttocks. So, you know, you would want to know if that happened. And if you're having that much pain and your pain is worsened and it's radiating up through your hip, it's going to start to affect everything. It's going to affect how you move, how you walk. You're going to get progressive weakness through your hip. You can overload your back. I mean, really, you can end up with a lot of secondary problems as you try to recover from this. So, I'd be seen for this. Hamstrings are very difficult to recover from. I mean, we see people with chronic hamstring pain, and there's a lot of research done on rehabilitating people with chronic hamstring pain. So I think getting in and getting a good assessment of the severity of this and laying out a treatment plan will be in your best interest in the long run, particularly if you're an active exerciser.
All right.
Okay, I guess I really needed to hear that because I wasn't planning on doing anything.
I could hear that, yeah. And that's why I tried to be really clear.
It's a good thing you called in today.
Yeah, I really wouldn't let this go because you're just going to dink around with it for 6 months, and then you're going to eventually decide you need to go in and see somebody, and by then it'll be hard to sort out what came first.
Do you have an idea of how long it'll take to fully recover from so I can get back on my regular exercise regimen?
No, that's what someone who examined you would determine based upon the exam. They're going to look at the flexibility. They're going to palpate. They're going to check your strength. They're going to look at your hamstring, your glute. They're going to do an assessment. And then when they have more information about the severity of the injury, then they'll be able to give you a more accurate prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate your call.
I guess the other thing I'd say about it is hamstrings take a long time, which is why it's better to get on the right track from the get-go rather than waiting.
Lynette in Madison has a question for you. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. This is also a hamstring issue, I'm guessing. But I'm a runner. I've been running for about 35 years. And just recently, maybe in the last week or two, I've noticed tightness in my gluteal fold on my right side. And what I'll do is sit on a little ball to massage it, and it really helps. Like, I'll use a 4-pound medicine ball. That helps. Or a can of frozen beans. But I went running the other day and did some speed work, and that kind of aggravated it. So I'm cutting back today. And I'm just wondering, I'm stretching my hamstrings pretty well. I do it in three different angles,
so I get all of them. And I'm just wondering if what that muscle might be called and what might be going on.
Well, there's lots of muscles in that glute area. There are three gluteal muscles. There's deep hip rotators. And, of course, the sciatic nerve runs through that area as well. You know, using the ball to self-massage is a really good idea, and that sounds like a good start, a really good start. And stretching, I would stretch more than just your hamstrings. I would stretch the gluteal area, and you do this with your knee, with your knee bent, and pull the knee up towards your right shoulder. And then I would change the angle, pull it up across towards your left shoulder. You know, when you use a ball to do deep massage, and you hope that you quiet, you work some knots out, you quiet the muscle, if there's any muscle spasm down, but then you want to lengthen the muscle. And that should help those knots from returning again. And so I would do more than just your hamstring. And if that doesn't work over another week or two and your running is not getting better, then I'd go in and see a physical therapist, and they'll examine not only your hamstring and your hip but also your lumbar, your low back area. I mean, maybe something going on there that sets you up for this to occur. So continue with the deep massage. Add stretching to the glute area, not just hamstrings. And if that doesn't work in a week or two, then I'd go in and get seen.
Okay.
There you go.
Fantastic.
Yep. Thanks, Lynette, for calling. And Mike and Cato, hello to you.
Yeah, I have knee pain in my left knee that I experience when I'm kneeling. I do landscape work, so I actually end up doing that quite a bit. But it's when the knee is at about 90 degrees or past, and I put pressure on the kneecap like I'm kneeling, I get a sharp pain from just below the outside of my kneecap straight to the back of my leg. It feels like a cut that's tearing open. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
there's no external evidence of injury, and I honestly don't remember doing anything besides I was on my knees planting a bush and moved and felt it. And ever since, I can't get the pain any other time unless there's pressure on my kneecap. Any other movement, squatting or anything like that, the pain isn't there. It's only if I actually put that knee on the ground.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, there's a couple possibilities. The most likely scenario is some arthritis on the undersurface of your kneecap, where it touches the adjacent bone underneath. So probably because you tend to kneel in the same position, and then when you kneel on it and you compress the kneecap to that bone below it, you probably have some arthritis right in that area, and you may even have a little bone spur in that area. So when you put pressure on it, it screams at you. So typically,
well, I do know in college about 12 years ago, I did sprain that same knee,
mm-hmm.
and I was told I had a small tear in the cartilage underneath the kneecap, but I haven't had any issues with it after, you know, 6-9 months after it healed.
Right.
I've never had an issue since, but that's the history of the knee.
Right. Well, that would be consistent then with this, because if you had damage to the cartilage at that time, you know, that has probably progressed over time to the point now when you put a lot of pressure on it, it's symptomatic. So, you know, what do you do about it? Do you wear knee pads?
I do, unless I'm on anything besides grass. I do have, a hard shell knee pad for work.
Okay, and does that help?
It does, but it's still, if I get the pressure in the right spot,
mm-hmm.
it'll still get me in there.
So what you may have to do is, the easy solution is to try to avoid that spot. The second is you can make, or you can get like a donut pad so that when you put pressure in that area, you put the whole of the donut right over the area that hurts, so that when you lean that way, the pressure goes on the surrounding area and not directly on that spot. So if somehow you can build that into your knee pad, then that might work as well. And then again, just trying to change your position frequently and making sure that you stay strong, you keep your muscles strong, you stay flexible so that you don't overload your kneecap so much with your daily activities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Thanks for calling. And Mike in Green Bay, hello. Do you have a quick question?
Hello?
Hi, Mike.
Yeah. I have I'm 50 years old, I'm very active, and I have an 1/8 inch to a 1/4 inch
my right side is longer than the other side, and I've noticed that when they took an x-ray from a chiropractor like 10 years ago, it was like a quarter inch longer, so it confirmed what I thought. Anyway, so when I do squats and so forth, all my injuries are on my right side. In fact, I had sciatica on my right side like a few years ago. And so I went to a therapist a few years ago, and they watched how I walk, and they said, well, there's really nothing really wrong with you. Yeah, you do have a little higher hip than the other, but, you know, we could give you orthotics. But so I felt totally helpless. But so I just want to know if there's anything I can do other than orthotics to make this better.
Well, first of all, there's a lot of measurement error and leg length difference. But if you notice a difference and you feel a difference, the easy solution is to try a heel lift, not a custom orthotic or anything, but just go to a drugstore, get a small heel lift, quarter inch, even an eighth of an inch to start with, and work your way into it, adjusting to having a little bit of a lift in that shoe and see how you feel. And that would be the easy solution to see if it makes a difference for you.
Mm-hmm. Good way to start. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our University of Wisconsin physical therapists, our guests. And they will be with us right up until 12:30. You can join in with a question to them at 1-800-642-1234. And we will be back with Lori and Bill right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Well, whether it's an old injury that we just can't seem to fully recover from, or a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may be dealing with some aches and pains, and it can be hard to know what's just an annoyance. It's going to go away on its own, or what really needs some medical attention. Larry Mueller here. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault with us to share what they know and give us the benefit of their experience as we talk about these things. Bill's an associate, full professor, at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic. Always a pleasure, Bill.
Thank you. Good to be back, as always.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And thank you again, Lori, as well.
Good to be here. It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day in Wisconsin. And Bill, I know we had a caller who was interested in talking about the leg length. He had a little different length of leg. One was a quarter inch or whatever.
Yeah, and Lori's recommendation was to try correcting it and maybe starting with an eighth of an inch instead of fully correcting it and see what happens. And that's what most people end up doing. It's really common to have a difference in leg length. I think most of us do to a degree, and for most of us it's not an issue. But for some people it can be a big problem. And Mike described activities on his feet that make him worse, and could this be an issue? And it's possible. And you know, when I see a patient in the clinic, I'll partially correct a leg length discrepancy, putting something inside their shoe, or if it's a standing movement that's painful, I correct the leg length, and if they move better and feel better, then we change the leg length. But it's, for most people, it's been there forever, and our bodies have adapted to it. So if they fully correct it or overcorrect it, then that can cause problems. And that's probably more part of my caution than anything. And Lori mentioned an earlier caller about an orthotic. It was somebody with heel pain. Is, you know, with an orthotic, you start wearing it for parts of the day, not necessarily all the day, because your body has to get used to it.
Yeah.
And same thing if people are thinking they're going to correct a leg length discrepancy, is you don't want to overcorrect it, fully correct it, and give your body some time to adjust to that heel lift that they put in.
Good advice. Carl in Mercer has a question for you. Let's go there. Carl, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. In, I guess it was about 1998, I had a discectomy where I think it was lumbar 3 and lumbar 4. They removed some material. It was actually at a UW hospital. Phenomenal job. Felt great right afterwards. Since then, I have some ongoing pain, and exercise really exacerbates it. And, you know, I'm getting older, getting a little bit wider, so I like to try to do sit-ups once in a while. But but I tell you, if I do a sit-up, it brings it right back. So I was wondering what types of exercises I could do that wouldn't cause any additional pain.
Yeah, that's a great question. And staying in shape is really a good goal. Carl, when you do sit-ups, is it back pain only, or are you having some sciatica along with it?
It starts out with back pain, but I feel that if I kept monkeying around with it, it would go to sciatica.
Okay. All right. Sit-ups are notorious for causing problems that when people have an underlying disc injury, which is what you had that led to the surgery. There's a tremendous amount of pressure inside the discs, and as you do the sit-up, there's more and more pressure. And so it stresses the area that was operated on, and the nerves are close by. And so strengthening your trunk is a really good idea. I would do it different ways than doing sit-ups would be my recommendation. And Carl, since with the history of the surgery and what you described, I'd recommend seeing a physical therapist. It wouldn't take more than a visit or two for them to examine you and see are there certain positions you need to stay out of and how to dose the exercise like Lori's talked about a few times today. And then they can teach you ways to get at your abdominals and the muscles on the back of your back that could really help you. But what you're describing is a classic example. You're doing things that to help yourself, yet it's causing problems. And we see that all the time in the clinic. So a visit or two to get some advice of what's the best way to isolate the muscles and the muscles that you need to strengthen the most is what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Carl. And Renee in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And what can we do for you?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with a frozen shoulder, and undergoing the 8-9 years of having a frozen shoulder, I finally revisited another doctor and an MRI, and they told me, it's not a frozen shoulder, you need to get a shoulder replacement. So with my limited range of arm movement, I've been on the ground trying to lift weights over my head, trying to stretch it because I'm not ready yet for a shoulder replacement. And I'm wondering, just this morning, thinking, I wonder whether I'm doing this is more harm or is it good to do the stretching? That's my question.
Well, how does it feel afterwards?
Well, I think I have a little bit more range in it. Just trying to, and I feel it popping better instead of not popping, so it doesn't hurt afterwards, but I'm just worried that I'm wearing it out faster.
It sounds like it's already worn out. I mean, if they're telling you need a shoulder replacement. So, in general, keeping as much motion as possible is useful. The farther you go overhead, the more you're going to stress the structures of your shoulder because the way your shoulder joint capsule works is that as you come up in an overhead position, the capsule kind of winds upon itself and tightens, and you can think about it cranking down the bones of your shoulder, bringing them in closer approximation to each other. So mm-hmm. as you come overhead, they're going to rub against each other more. So, if you're not getting any more pain and losing motion and losing function as you do it, certainly go ahead and try. If you're a candidate for a total shoulder, I'd have to say I'd kind of put you in the category you really have nothing to lose by seeing what you can do, but you don't want to be losing function and having more pain so that you can't go back to your exercise program. So, those sort of general rules of exercise apply. That is, if you wake up the next day with more pain, if your pain comes on earlier in the next exercise session, or if you have to start to limit your regular daily activities because your exercise program is causing so much pain, then you're over-exercising.
Well, thank you. That sounds a good word of advice. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Brenda in Onalaska has a question next. Hi, Brenda. Brenda, are you there? Brenda, we lost. Let's go to Mark in Fond du Lac. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my phone call. I have a tendonitis issue. It started probably 3-4 months ago. I was very active in playing racquetball. We were playing 3-4 times a week, 2-3 hours at a time. And my elbow started hurting worse and worse. So thought I could play through it. About 3 weeks later, I could barely grip the ball or the racket. So I went to my doctor and referred me to a orthopedic surgeon to, you know, get an evaluation of it and look at it. The orthopedic surgeon recommended therapy. I went for 12 times of physical therapy. It was getting better. My grip strength was started at 137 in that hand. It's my right elbow. Started getting stronger. We started doing some strength training. And the first time we tried it, it re-injured it. That was about 2 months ago. Since then, I've went about 12 more times for a total of 19 visits for physical therapy. And last Tuesday, he just said, this isn't working. It's just, I can't get the inflammation down. I ice it 3 to 4 times a day, ibuprofen. Immobilize it. I actually have a wrist-type splint on for carpal tunnel to stop any movement in the wrist, which strains it on the elbow. I also have the compression on the elbow itself. And today I go back to my doctor, and I'm wondering if there's any suggestions of what I can do, because it's, if I open up my hand, I have pain. If I close it, I have pain. If I extend my elbow, I have pain. Constant pain.
Hmm. Wow. Sounds like a really bad case. So the things they were doing in therapy, what kind of things did they do in therapy for 19 visits?
We started with we started with some basically rubbing it down every time. We'd go in, they'd put some cream on it, they'd rub it down, which really felt good. It really was painful, but it really made a difference.
Okay, so like a cross friction or something. Okay.
Yep. And then we went to the patch with the
Ionto. Okay.
Anti-inflammation into it.
Yep.
And I'd wear that for a few hours. We went to a ultrasound.
Okay.
Some anti-inflammation.
Yep. A phono. Okay.
We did some stretches.
Okay.
So stretch the wrist one way, stretch it the other way. Did some moderate strengthening. Maybe we use some like rubber bands and stuff. Some rowing type exercises. Some real slow movements up and down. And the inflammation just will not go down.
Okay. Well, a couple things. The cross friction massage was good. In terms of the exercise program, you know, I'd probably start with an isometric or a lowering exercise, because that's typically where you would start. A resistive band, I think, as you probably know, was too much. Probably the other thing that the physician might be able to offer you is a prolotherapy. And those are some injections that they use around the elbow that are non-cortisone based that can be helpful. So, at this point, is this your dominant arm?
Yes, ma'am.
And what kind of work do you do?
Not real active stuff.
Okay. All right. It's not work that's aggravating it. All right. Well, you know, a couple things. I presume you've been in therapy this much. Someone has cleared your neck or referred pain from someplace else. They're certain that they're actually dealing with a tendonitis, because there are other things that can mask themselves as tendonitis. So as long as they're clear that it's tendonitis, the anti-inflammatory measures they used were good. You might want to start on an eccentric exercise program, and it'll be painful, but given everything else you've done, that's probably the way I'd go next, because at this point, you really don't have much to lose. Nothing else has worked. So there is research that shows that the eccentric or lowering exercise programs, although they're uncomfortable, can help get you over the hump. So that or the prolotherapy that a physician might offer you, I would say, are the next strategies for you.
Could you give me an example of what that exercise program is?
What you do is somebody passively, with your palm down, lifts your wrist up, and then you lower it down with resistance.
Hmm.
You just do the lowering phase, or the negative of the muscle contraction.
Okay, what's your take on the whole cortisone? Because I'm assuming, I have an appointment in 45 minutes, I'm assuming that's going to be his next step.
Yeah, you know, cortisone and tendons is generally a non-starter because cortisone is a catabolic effect. It'll break down the tendon, and although it may beat back the inflammation temporarily, it tends to come back. And when it comes back with on a weakened tendon.
Yeah, so
okay. So there, I probably wouldn't do that. If it were my elbow, I wouldn't do it.
Okay, there you go. Good luck, Mark. Thank you for calling. Well, that's for him to consider there. Joy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I wonder if you have any suggestions to ease the pain in them. I have a bruised sternum. It's been 3 weeks now, and I've been to the doctor, and he's pretty convinced it wasn't broken but or cracked, but it's extremely painful when I sneeze or cough, and I've learned to use my arms to lower myself down to a reclining position. But is there anything I can do to ease that pain from coughing?
Well, the best thing you can do is to basically give yourself a hug. When you feel a cough or a sneeze coming on, kind of wrap your arms around you in the front and just kind of gently hold in, and that will minimize the movement of your ribs and your sternum.
Uh-huh.
And that's people who have cracked a rib, and it sounds like they've ruled that out. That's all you can really do just to protect that area. And so basically you're splinting yourself is what you're doing. If that doesn't work, sometimes hugging a pillow and doing that same thing, it adds a little more cushion to the front and just kind of minimize the excursion of the rib cage. So that's the best thing to do for the coughing and the sneezing.
Great. Okay.
You know, and any type of stretching, you want to do it very gently. And I think to start with stretching through your arms, if you sit up tall, maybe against a dining room chair so your back is against the backrest, and gently bring your arms up toward the ceiling and just stretch up and a little bit out to the side can be a way to just gently stretch muscles that attach to that area. Uh-huh. And again, you don't want to go to the point where you feel any sharpness, but just kind of a good stretch in the front. That can help speed this up a little bit.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. But an email from Hillary in Kansas City, Missouri, who's listening in. A couple of days ago, I began experiencing a popping sensation right below my kneecap in my left knee. First felt it when I took a step down on a flight of stairs, and it was a feeling that my knee was about to give out on me. I'm an active exerciser, do gym workouts as well as running. Over the past several months, I've lost some excess weight, gotten in pretty good shape. Haven't had any other knee problems. I'm not sure if this popping sensation is from overworking my knee or if it indicates an underlying knee problem. Right now, it's not painful, just uncomfortable. So I'd like to know what I can do to prevent it from getting worse.
It sounds like a kneecap issue. It could be some instability in her kneecap. It could be a little arthritis in her kneecap. There are a number of causes, and probably number one on the list is weakness around your hip. So seeing a physical therapist, and there are some good physical therapists in Kansas City. I did some affiliations there when I was a student, to examine, is it her posture? For example, women tend to be slightly knock-kneed, and that knock-kneed position, especially when you're going down a stair with your knee turning in rather than staying in a nice line with your hip and foot, causes kneecap popping and pain. And the problem isn't a primary knee problem, but it's actually a hip problem. It's due to weakness and poor posture at your hip. So, you know, we could do a bunch of strengthening around her knee, but if the underlying problem is her hip, that's where the intervention needs to be addressed. So, you know, given that she's worked so hard to lose this weight and get into a regular exercise program, you don't want to get sidelined by a problem that has probably a pretty simple solution. So I'd go see a physical therapist for a visit or two, get an examination, figure out the source of the popping, and get on an exercise program that you can incorporate right into your gym program to keep this from getting worse.
Lori in Hales Corners, thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks. I'm calling because I have a weird hip problem. It's like maybe impingement isn't the right word, but I'd be sitting at my computer or doing a puzzle, leaning forward to see well, and then when I go to stand up, especially if I sat a long time, I have pain and I can't stand right up. I have to straighten my right leg out. It's on the right side. and even bend my legs slightly backward. I don't know how to show you over the radio. But it hurts, and then it doesn't even hurt when I go to stand up if I do that before I stand up. So there's, it's like the hinges mm-hmm. is like the leg gets under the hip mm-hmm. or something like that there.
Yeah. It could be impingement. There are a couple of impingement problems. It's called femoral acetabular impingement. And there's a couple different types, particularly in women, because of the design of our hips. Depending upon your age, it could also be some arthritis. And if you're sitting...
78.
yeah. So it could be a combination of those things. So, you know, my recommendation would be to, to try to avoid sitting in the same position. And if you could find a chair where you're not so flexed at your trunk, where you're really compressing the front of your hip joint when you're sitting, even one of those little those half-sitting kneeling chairs or something where you can change the position of your hip while you're sitting, I think would be useful.
Mm-hmm. And Lori, a good position may be when you're sitting, instead of having your knees straight in front of your hips, have your knees spread apart a bit. That puts that hip in what we call a little bit of abduction, and that can decrease the compression a little bit, especially in the front of that hip. Then I agree with Lori, if there's a way you can sit up a little higher so your hips aren't bent as much, that may help a little bit.
Good luck. Thanks, Lori. Stephanie in Arcadia, we're starting to run out of time here. Have you got a quick question?
My 13-year-old son plays football, and he's had some popping in his hips, both hips, and I can feel it when he walks.
Hmm. Is he having pain with it?
He hasn't reported any pain, but he says he can feel it and hear it. It doesn't hurt, though.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if your school has an athletic trainer. 13 is probably not in high school yet. He's probably in eighth grade.
Yep.
Yeah, they may not have an athletic trainer. I'd probably have him looked at. It could just be a tendon that's popping over a bone. It could be, there's some popping that can happen in the front of your hip. There's some popping that can happen on the sides of your hip. And just getting him on the right stretching may prevent that problem from getting worse. So, as long as he can run and play football and do everything that he needs to do, it's probably not a terrible problem. But like the last caller, there can be some impingement problems that show up as popping. So just having someone, if there's someone at the school like an athletic trainer or your family practice physician, take a look at it and maybe see a PT for some examination and some stretching would be useful.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. An email from Bob in Minocqua says, thanks to the great advice I've received from your show over the last 2 years, I was able to run a half marathon again this year, and I'm 74 years old.
Wow. I hope I
can
do that. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well,
good for you.
Yeah, and good for you guys. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's always a great pleasure, and you'll be back. In a month.
Sometime.
Yes, in October, mid-October.
October 21st, sure. As a matter of fact.
Perfect.
Late October.
Perfect. Yes, it'll be close to Halloween. We'll wear our costumes.
There we go. Injuries on Halloween night, we can talk about.
Oh, yes, that'll be perfect.
Oh, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our UW physical therapist, will be with us on October 21st once again. Tomorrow at 11, we'll hear about a fascinating new exhibit at the UW-Madison Geology Museum. It's really cool. And at 11:45, Professor Bassam Shakashiri talks about opportunities and challenges in the world of science. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.